Buonasera, amici. The Mona Lisa here, bags packed and ready to catch the next flight to Florence. But before I do, a parting gift for all you Sparks fans, it's all you ever think about is Sparks, episode 34. The concluding half of Christian and Company's The Girl is Crying in Her Latte Listening Party. Monte Mallin, Joe Seeger, Penny Brown, and Paul Barrett all return to wax philosophical about the new album. If only you could see the inscrutable expressions on their faces. Ciao!
Hey guys, we're going to move on to song 7, Not That Well Defined.
Things are either black or they are white. Things are either wrong or they are right. Things are either good or they are bad. Things are either happy or the sad. Can a person say that they exist when so far they manage to resist?
Get the full band back for this one. I'm looking at my notes here for this. We've talked already a lot about the undefined idea, the meme that keeps popping up through some of these songs. And this is certainly one of them. And I also made a note to ask Paul about a meta reading of this one. let me just point out my favorite line here, or couplet, or whatever. Now, while you're posing there with Claude Monet, as he finished you, he'd proudly say, "Now that is art." And I love that because
it's great.
It is. It shows this undefined person is perfect, like as an impressionist painting.
Yeah.
Something it doesn't have to be perfectly defined for it to be wonderful. That's really all I've got here. So I'm going to let you guys go on from
can
there.
Can I just say about that line as well? The music that follows it, the way the strings come in, really drama after that line, "Now that is art." It's such a great moment.
Agreed. On
the
record.
Yeah, it's fantastic. My reading of it is like, we were talking on Messenger the other day, and we were saying that no two people see Sparks the same way. You know, some people see him as that one-hit wonder from the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, depending on what country you come from. Other people see him as this big art project. Others see him as, well, I don't know, like everybody's got their own definition for what Sparks are. Is something that you can't nail down. And I think that's a celebration of that. It's a theme that comes up in a few places. And that's how I tie it to the band. It's something everyone's got their own opinion on what Sparks are, because I think they haven't put a definition out there. Is one way of looking at it.
And I am 100% with you on this one, by the way. Cool. I read that too. Penny?
The one thing that bothers me about this song is that with lines like, "She's like a half erased sketch" or "fog dealt from the sea," I mean, they're rather kind of negative and diminishing images. And whereas in It Doesn't Have to Be This Way, individuality is being celebrated, as you say here, the being not well defined doesn't seem to be wholeheartedly celebrated. I mean, maybe I'm wrong in seeing that line as rather diminishing. She's like a half erased sketch. I don't know. I'd be pleased to hear what other people think about that.
Yeah, I hear what you mean by that line, because it sounds like someone had the capability of being well defined, and that was removed. Then being undefined is some sort of a loss, is kind of how I read that.
That's what I find interesting, though, is all of the examples in the songs are things that are well defined but can't be seen properly. So, like, as a contract that's unsigned, and what else is there? A photograph after too much
wine.
That's a good one.
That's again kind of unreal, isn't it?
So a photograph.
Yeah.
It is well defined. You just shouldn't be drunk when looking at it.
Well, so that's another interesting line, because that sounds like it's a product of a mistake, of not being careful or something. I don't know if that was
haven't explained logic. Themselves.
I
think Sparks know exactly what they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the rest of the world haven't got a clue. So to the world, they're not well defined.
Yeah, with you there.
I find this one rather melancholic, I have to say.
What I would add, though, is that I think there's three or four songs that really are reflective in terms of their career. And I think what they're trying to capture here, which they address later on the album, this is what they've heard. This is what they've heard over the years. We don't know what to do with you. We don't understand you. You're not well defined. Then they put it into these clever lyrics, but that's what I hear. I hear it as starting to say, this is what we've heard. And then later they tell us what their response is.
Nice.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
I like that. And we'll get to that.
About it.
I agree with that too. I mean, I hear melancholy, but defiant, in that this is what they do. This is what we've always done. And now and then, you know, when they have a little bit of success, they've tried to put them in it, you know, let's define that again. Let's do that again. You know, just like when they put out music that you can dance to, it was like the song you cannot dance to at all. It's not what, but they did it. Well, okay, here you go. Music you can dance to, here you go. You know, and it's kind of like that, because I guess people want them to dumb it down, maybe to make it easy for the masses to get. But as Sparks fans know, we all have a different feeling about Sparks. We have a different, it depends where you came in, right? And even some of these songs, we all listen to them and we have a little bit different take on them. And we're not just casual Sparks fans. We're more involved in that. But it's just, you know, like they've been told that, you know, you need to be more defined and make it for people to get a big following. And they go, we don't want to get a big following. We want the people that want to follow us. And they all make it.
Well, but Joe, maybe they have wanted. Maybe this idea that they never wanted this, or they've purposely torpedoed stuff, is incorrect. Maybe they have wanted it, but at the end of the day, they just have to be who they are. And that's why I think the song later on the album, that it articulates that point of view. It's okay to be who you are. You might pay for it, but it's okay. Be who you are. Absolutely. You know? So
Oh my gosh, I wasn't even thinking about that song. I was thinking about another song that I thought was going to be the companion to the song. That's another great example.
There's several songs that kind of get mixed up in my brain for that same thought, you know, that they're kind of related. And then you think, oh no, that's the other song. I have to make myself notes, or I'm talking about the wrong song.
I kind of feel like with the last album, they wanted to put out really good songs, and there's Sparks and they did that. And then there's iPhone and maybe one or two others left out in the dark where they really had something to say. Whereas this one, they just had some things they wanted to say, and it comes out throughout the album. And that's what elevates it. You know, trying to decipher, like we're doing here, what is it that they really want us to get from this thing?
On the other hand, And I think that's totally right. And I think the overall quality of these songs is really great. However, I don't hear something that would be a potential radio hit. And, you know, and I don't know if that's just because they didn't, you know, care, you know, to try. But on most albums, I hear at least one track. I'm like, oh, this sounds like a play for some sort of radio relevance. And which could be interpreted as sacrificing, giving in or something. And I don't see that here. But then again, I also don't hear something that is going to excite the masses. And that may be one of their points.
I think one of the songs at the beginning probably has the best chance.
I think so too. And that's still, I mean, because it's got a good beat and you can dance to it. You know, but it's still, you know, off, it's going to be off-putting for someone who's just popped into a club.
Well, no question about it. Yeah.
No?
I remember hearing Beat the Clock in clubs back in the day.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear that here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Was there anybody else before we go on to the next song?
Well, what's funny is the next song is about a place and a life where life is very well defined and controlled.
Great point. Let's go ahead and transition then. Unless someone else has something.
At the Albert Hall, sorry, can I just say, Russell explained this. Well, explained it. He told us what it was about on the surface.
As if you couldn't tell.
Who says we don't have the fun above the DMZ? We assemble daily and we dance incessantly. And we go dancing, dancing. We go dancing, dancing. Yongin is a rockin' missus driving through the square. We go dancing proudly, legs are kicking in the air. And we go dancing, dancing. We go dancing, dancing. We have got the greatest DJ in the whole wide world. King Jong-un is what they call a man, he rocks our world. As we go dancing, dancing. We go dancing, dancing. Skrillex may be Diplo, they've got nothing on.
We go dancing, song 8. I mean, this is not that hard to figure out lyrically. This is North Korea, the hermit state. It's completely authoritarian, fascistic, I suppose. And here we have Kim Jong-un as the world's greatest DJ. And why not? Because maybe he can make the greatest number of people dance to his song. You know, whether by force or, you know, whatever. So here to, I thought it was also interesting, you know, that you have this nominally dance song, which is like not danceable, of course. But the idea of a dance party with a DJ being a fascist DJ party. It's To steal from a Weird Al Yankovic album, Mandatory Fun, which is just such a fun juxtaposition. And this is one of the few places on the album where they actually get into politics with a big P, when they're actually talking about current events, which is something that they rarely get into. I was frankly surprised, you know, to see that they actually mentioned Kim Jong-un by name here.
Very rare that they do that.
But fascism can be fun, guys. I think that's what, and I think that may be sort of a critical point that they could be making, that's not just for North Korea, but for, you know, those of us in UK, places in the EU and of course the United States right now, where we are seeing burgeoning fascistic movements, and don't they seem to be having fun? I mean, they've got all the marches and they've got all the signs, don't they?
Yeah, dance of war.
Right. So that's what we should be doing. Anyway, so let me push it on there. Oh, just one more thing. Well, I really like the goose step beats near the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, but that was nice. Who'd like to talk about this one?
To me, it reminds me of Baby, Baby, Can I Invade Your Country? And, like, Reinforcements, you know, taking a song about war and making it about, you know, sex.
Another rare song where they were political with the capital P.
Yeah, war something that comes up every now and then in their songs, like in "I Married a Martian," not "I Married a Martian." Fun bunch of guys from outer space. They say where we come from. Even war is fun.
So, yeah.
And so, in Sparks World, yeah, they do make these songs about war. Really fun. Sorry to go back to Annette, but the video that I put out today. It's talking about Sparks writing to rules that were set by the director, Leos Carax. Like, for instance, I think he, his instructions to them as like a screenwriting experiment was to write songs without the irony or the wit that usually.
Really?
Sort of the pill.
That was the direction. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I believe a collaboration, obviously, but
right. That was a decided thing that they were doing.
There are a lot of clues to this, but yeah, it's in the video, and there's more of it to come. But I see this as that the combination, like dancing, is a celebratory party thing, but here it's just completely regimented and to very, very strict rules, and I think that's similar to what they were doing with Annette, by my definition of it.
Interesting.
I just got to say that line, we don't have a lot of moves, but that one move is tight. I think that is perfect. I mean, that's wonderful.
That could be Sparks talking about Sparks.
I just like the imagery. I like the imagery.
Oh, okay.
All these soldiers dancing. To like, you know,
I was like, Paul, make this a Meta Sparks thing. Yeah, okay.
No, it's just funny. Like I said in the last episode as well, this is music that you can march to.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Anyone else?
Well, do you know, it reminds me of people dancing on hot coals, you know, that kind of thing, that they're dancing not because they're happy and want to be dancing, but because they're told you've got to dance, you know. He said it about being injured and so on, but I mean, basically it's just that people becoming like sort of mechanical automata in this kind of regime, isn't it? It's just straightforward political comment.
Dancing should be spontaneous and dancing should be for joy.
Yes,
and this, of course, is neither of those.
Yes. Like, and another misleading title.
Yeah.
Like dance goddamn.
To say the least, yeah.
Or rhythm thief, you know, where did the beat go? You know, it's kind of like you think.
Both of those, yes.
Yeah, but they were, you know, it's like Little Beethoven and kind of like this group, The Residents, kind of the music that's kind of eerie and weird. You can't really dance to it, but to me it's catchy. And then you talk about, you know, the DJ, Kim Jong-un. You know, that's all you need. You don't need YouTube or anybody else to tell you what to do. He'll play it for you. You listen to him. And I love the way Russell will go, you know, dun, 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 dance. You know, like, you must dance, you know, not, you know, because it's fun. You must do it. So, yeah. And then with the you must goose step at the end and do it, you know, the little cadence marching. So
I might be getting a little over my head here, but I feel like there are some. There are some movements in here that sound like a bit like Stravinsky. I'm thinking about some of the more atonal or things that you hear in the Rites of Spring or something. A little bit in this, and if they did put something like that, that was inspired by Stravinsky, that just underscores the point that, hey, this isn't really dance music, is it?
No.
A lot of fun, interesting centerpiece, you know, for for an album. And again, I just love that it's dance music that is neither it's not fun.
Not joyous fun.
Yes. Okay. Anybody else before we move on to song 9? Here we go. Song 9, When You Leave.
They'll be breaking out the hard stuff when you leave. They'll be breaking out the chit chat when you leave. They'll be breaking out the making out when you leave. They can't wait. They can't wait. They'll be breaking out the Xbox when you leave. They'll be breaking out the Courvoisier when you leave. They'll be breaking out every Belgian beer when you leave. They can't wait. They can't wait. I'm gonna stay just to annoy them. I'm gonna stay just to piss them off. I'm gonna stay just to amuse myself. I'm gonna stay. I'm gonna stay.
This was an interesting song to me. Boy, boy, there's just, and there are two, it sounds like there are two voices here. They'll be breaking out the hot, all the things that we're going to do when you leave. And then the person who is told to leave then responds, hell no, I'm not going anywhere. Even if it's just to piss you off, even if it's just to defy you, this is what I'm going to do. Here is where I'm going to be. And I'm not going to leave, which I love so much. When I first started listening to the song, I thought a lot about, I'm a big David Bowie fan. So his penultimate album, he had the song near the end called You Feel So Lonely You Could Die. And it was all a berating of the person who is the object of the song, who's a terrible person, you know, and the narrator is like, you know, I hope you crawl into your room on your bed with no sheets and you die and no one will love you and no one will be missed and we want you gone because you've done all these horrible things. And then we have somewhat of a setup like this. People are going to celebrate so much when you're gone. And then, you know, Ron just comes right around and says, yeah, well, I'm not going to do that, which was a really fun level of defiance that I didn't expect to see. And I don't know how many other Spark songs, you know, are out there that deal with that. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the full band. And, you know, I think this is one of the more important songs on the album,
especially
in terms of, especially in terms of understanding, particularly if you buy into a lot of Metasparks theories, this is a really strong candidate. And I think kind of tells you where their mind may have been right there. You know, exaggerated for effect, I'm sure. I'll pass it on. Monty, do you have ideas?
The only thing, I think that's really interesting just hearing it. What I'll add is the first, you know, I like your idea of the two voices. And when I first heard the song, I mainly heard the predominant voice telling them, you know, kind of the mean voice. And I thought, this is uncharacteristically mean for a Spark song. And it rubbed me the wrong way. But then after we talked and I started listening to it more, I heard it from the other voice, the protagonist, I guess, who's saying, I'm not going to leave. You can throw all this crap at me. I'm not going to leave. All of a sudden, it opened it up. It opened up the whole song for me and gave me a real good appreciation for, you know, some of the things that you're saying, Christian, but also just this is a good song of defiance. And I like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fight the power. It's punk.
Fight the power.
Yeah. Me? Sparks were always punk in their own way.
They are punk in their own way.
Don't you think it's a kind of revenge song against, like, Piss Off, for example?
Oh, yes.
You know,
absolutely.
I'm not gonna, I'm not going to, I'm going to piss them off, he says. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So you think that this could be a response to piss off?
Well, I mean,
I think just saying it's in the same vein, right?
Same vein. Same narrator. Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they have some paranoia thinking what's going to happen once they leave.
Yeah.
They were invited, but you know, they regret it and they're sorry they did. But I'm just going to stay to annoy them, to toy with them, to amuse myself. You know, they kept me around. So that, to me, that part, you know, when he sounds kind of angry, reminds me of Morrissey type song, you know, like.
Oh, I think someone else made that point too. Yeah. I read somewhere.
It's more. Because I just said, oh, that sounds like a Morrissey kind of either retorting to like, oh, everybody hates me, like heaven knows I'm miserable now, and blah, 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 that kind of stuff. But it, you know, but they list all those things, you know, Belgian beer and good music like this.
Well, they'll be breaking out the Xbox, the Cavassier.
Yeah, or like, there's going to be
good lines. The stylist.
What's the one line in there? Liquids of unmentionable liquids or something.
Their liquids when they leave. You know, first up, red wine and then salsa and God knows what other kind.
Thank you.
I love that.
There'll be red wine on all the carpets when you leave. There'll be salsa on all the carpets when you leave. Now, when I listened to the song, it sounded like he said, Russell said, there'll be salsa on the other carpets when you leave, which I thought was just like, I don't know, just very Ron.
On the other carpet.
Yeah.
God knows what color of other liquids when you leave. With that track, they're just going all out, you know, this is all going to happen, you know, going to swing from the chandeliers and all that kind of stuff.
But I love what Penny said. I mean, it's an FU song.
It is.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Really,
it's hilarious. But don't you think also that the narrator is another one of the typical All Sparks kind of insecure guy that imagines, because we're with a little bit of paranoia, you know, there. Because it's so OTT, all these things are going to happen, you know, when he comes.
They never left. They're 77 years old and they never left.
Nope. So they're not going to leave. We're not leaving now, you know, kind of thing.
Fantastic. Love it. Paul, did you have anything to add? I don't know if I already called
it. Yeah, I think it's a really funny song. I love the sound of it. I love the woozy sound of it.
I do too.
Really great record. Really funny topic. From the meta side, if we're talking about taking the sadness of the style of songwriting from Annette and turning that into 3 or 4 minute pop songs, then I think that's what's leaving. That's what's on the way out. This is the last hurrah of sad songwriting, and what comes next is going to be joyful, because the subject of leaving is on loads of songs here. It's
yes.
on later. It's on the Mona Lisa's leaving. It's on the opening song, The Girl Is Crying in a Latte. It's a really like predominant theme of the album, and it does kind of hint at the idea of Sparks leaving as a band, but I don't think that's the case. I think is leaving this kind of songwriting behind. The other thing is what you said about the lyrics that overlap themselves, that comes up on a few songs here, and that's something that's carried over from Annette as well, because if you think of Sympathy for the Abyss, the bit with Annette and Henry McHenry at the end, they're singing over each other. I think the song The Set in the Courtroom also does the same thing. So I think that's an ingredient that was added to their music that they've carried across.
Thank you. That was great, man. Okay, I'm going to move on to song 10. Or is that where we are? Take Me for a Ride? Did I miss something?
Side, but they'll never ever take me, take this boy alive. take me, take me, take me, take me for a ride, ride. Why, I wonder, did you stop and offer me a ride? You have got one heavy foot, we're going 95, 5. You seem like a girl in need of thrills to stay alive. With your Chevy power glide, you don't have to...
Take me for a ride, another song. Mark is being, it sounded like it was played by the full band, Stevie Nistor on drums and whoever else they got on there. I didn't really take a whole lot of notes here, except that it sounds a lot like Let the Monkey Drive.
Yeah.
You know, from the 2008
yeah.
album.
Mm-hmm.
I have thought. That. But, you know, what is this? You know, this could be another middle class ennui sort of situation. You know, this is what I think this is the song where she teaches kids and he got some other, he's an accountant or something. Is that the one, or is that
yeah.
a different
yeah
song?
No, that's yeah. this one where he
yeah.
Yeah. yeah
with your Chevy Pelican.
But it's the telling, it's the yeah. telling of the story, because you think of it as this great adventure, you yeah. know, kind of a film noir type story or something. And then it was after I got the lyrics and I started hearing it and I got the reveal. We talked about this before. When yeah. I saw the reveal, yeah. I was just blown away, and it just puts the song at a whole nother level. And I even called Paul on Messenger and said, "Have you heard this? Have you heard this? This is amazing." And now it's the song I go to pretty much every day immediately when I just got to hear a song from this album.
Well, keep going. Do you have more?
No, I think okay. it's a great song. I the only thing is there anyone who doesn't think this is just an absolutely great song? I mean,
no, I love this song.
Yeah.
The tale of Johnny and Laura who go for a ride, ride. I know, I love that.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Repeat. Ride, ride. You know, for some reason that I like that. And, you know, so they go on and travel down the road. They're evading the law, eating junk food, avoiding gentrified right. areas. I mean, it just cracks you up. And then you find out, oh, that's just their fantasy, you know, right. to get mm-hmm. out of their doldrums of life.
Right. And the other thing that Paul and I talked about was that our first reaction was, who's Laura? Who's George or whatever his name is? Mm-hmm. And then when you get the reveal, it's like, oh, of course you don't know who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not famous Sean Connery or anything like that. Uh-huh. They're just two people. And
mm-hmm.
it's just wonderful. And of course, the instrumentation, bringing in the electric guitar, the mm-hmm. orchestra, mm-hmm. yeah. everything, throwing everything into the mix. It works. It just works yeah. so well.
Yeah. There's a lot about this song compositionally that takes me back to Hello, Young Lovers and Exotic Creatures for the Deep when they were really taking the orchestration, even though it was synthetic orchestration, and melding it with like these metal guitars, which was a really cool, powerful sound, and there's a lot of that in here, which I, you know, I appreciate.
Kind of reminded me of Dick Around too, where you have
yes, nice, thank you, yes,
and you start doing
that. A lot of that.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me, which I like that song.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the end of The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman as well, the escape scene with all the, you know, the helicopters and the police chasing them. Same kind of idea of the chasing the fugitive.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah,
cool.
Did I miss anybody before we go on to It's Sunny Today?
Yeah, I will go into the meta side of it for this. But the orchestration on it's fantastic. And it's the intro tape that they use for their concerts. It really got the hair standing up on the back of my head. Mm. Just echo what everybody else said. It's such a dramatic, fun song. With a fantastic plot twist, and it's great.
Oh yeah, there's that kind of twinkly music, isn't it? That's right. Yes, he was at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect intro tape.
I don't know what Chevy Paraglide is, because I haven't owned a Chevy yet. Anybody have any idea what the Chevy Paraglide is?
Yeah, it's a type of it's a gear for cars, a transmission. And it's used like from the 50s or 60s, I think, but still used in drag racing. So you can launch yourself really quickly.
And there we go.
I think the song reflects that as well, because the song goes from like cinematic and free to just driving at full pace. And that's done like seamlessly. So, yeah, I really love that imagery that, you know, whether they can be driving around having fun together. And just as soon as they see the police, they're off.
Yeah.
I guess is one of the songs that just is, its primary emotion is like exhilaration with really nothing really bringing it down, except for the fact that, you know, that these people are engaging in crimes just because they're essentially bored.
Yeah. Passing the baton.
Yeah. Passing the baton. Okay. Anybody else before we move on? Here we go. We're on track 11. It's sunny today.
It's sunny today. It's sunny today. So what should we do? Let's get with the crew. And then we'll decide. Or just let it ride. Just play it by ear. I'm glad that you're here. It's sunny today. It's sunny today. So what should we do? Let's get with the crew.
It's sunny today. And look at me. I've got no notes next to it. It's sunny today for whatever reason.
I just can't get over the lazy lyrics.
The damn lazy lyrics, man. What the hell is up with you guys?
Yeah, I only wrote some three little notes too myself. Look, that darn lazy song.
Three notes?
I guess. But it's three. I mean, you know, it's funny because it's sunny today, but it's sort of a gloomy opposite of sunny. And it's definitely not like a Beach Boys song about the sun and being, you know, even though the guys are
over the summer.
Over the summer. Or even, you know, like the Beach Boys, you know, and their funny, happy, sunny songs. But this one is more like sunny today. You know, what I got from that is that, oh, it's sunny today. We should go do something. Don't we think we should go out? You know, kind of like, because that's what people do when it's sunny. You got to do things. But then, you know, I probably have to listen, watch the lyrics some more because I don't have them officially. But there's kind of like a.
I've got them.
Forbearing about because the locals don't appreciate them or don't want, you know, they don't appreciate their presence. So he's like, go out, but yeah, I don't know, might be a little dangerous. I don't know. So I'm gonna look that, you know, look at the lyrics further, but just from what I've seen, I'm like, oh, okay. So that's what I got from it.
Yeah, it's not really set really clear what it is that they're wanting to do. So what should we do? Let's get with the crew. It's sunny today. Yeah. It's sunny today. And there's another reference to an American car. Let's hop in your Ford and go to the shore. the locals' descent are middle class bent. Sunny today. It's sunny today. So this could be a little bit more of that middle class ennui. You know, why did it bring some meaning to my life, please? I hope they lay off. We don't set them off. What should we do? What should we do? Anyway, yeah, I don't have a lot of crystallized thoughts about this yet. Anyone else want to discuss?
Well, it reminds me of Popularity. Talking about lazy lyrics, you know, the in the pieces that I'd wrote recently about language in Sparks, one of the ideas was about inarticulacy. And in Popularity, it's obviously the guy's limited experience of life. He doesn't have the language either to talk about what he likes. But here it struck me that it's not quite the same thing. Here, I think the limited language reflects more the kind of languor. Like Joe said, it's a sunny today. It's, again, it's capturing a moment of feeling which we can identify with. It's a sunny day. So what should we do? Let's think about it. It's not describing a scenario or any actions. It's capturing a sort of moments of feeling, and yes, ennui by all means, but also a sort of languor. And then you get to that funny line about the locals resenting the middle class spent, which is kind of anxiety about. Yeah. So it's a bit like the tourists in Pacific Standard Time, you know, when they come, you know, they're never going back, you know, that sort of little snarky comment. Again, a little bit of uncertainty or fear in the narrator. Sure. I don't know. I like it. I think it's a nice song, and I didn't like the criticism of it, I have to say.
I don't think I didn't read any criticism of it. And I don't have any yet. Anyone else?
I'm sorry to hold everything up here. But again,
here's the criticism.
No, not at all. It's the exact opposite. You know, again, I really see this a life cycle theme playing out in this album, beginning with Nothing Is As Good, going through Escalator, You Were Meant For Me, Finally Met the Right Person, Take Me For a Ride. That's the life they had together. And now in my mind, I see, is it strictly me?
Yeah.
I see this guy at an old age home visiting this woman who he's had this complex life with, and trying to cheer her up. And she's perhaps dealing with Alzheimer's, perhaps coming to the end. And he's saying, it's sunny today. We'll go with our friends. We'll do all these things, but the end is coming. And maybe I'm reading way too much into it, but I see it as so poignant and so powerful because I can't help thinking of it in that context with the last song on the album, Closing It All Out. So
wow, thank you. Sorry, thank you for sharing that in that reading, man.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry if I got a little emotional, but
not at all.
You know, this song was one of the first that I dismissed, and now I just hear it as I can't stop hearing it in the way that I just laid it out. And again, that's me. That's me. I don't know if that's what they intended, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, I'll never think reading of it the same
way. That was made by on All That, wasn't it? When that first came out, that it was someone dying or watching somebody dying or somebody in a home. I remember reading that interpretation at the time of All That.
Yeah. Hmm. Thank you, Monty. Anybody else?
My two cents.
Sunniness and cold and tans and things like that come up a lot in Sparks lyrics, and when I've tried to attach meaning to other songs, it tends to be about the coldness being doing the hard work out of the spotlight, and the sunny being, you know, getting the success and acclaim. I'm thinking songs like Left Out in the Cold, where they're doing the research out in the Arctic conditions, making this cold weather where the other people feel the benefits of. And at the moment, Sparks are in a place of like commercial or critical success compared
relative sunniness, elsewhere. You might say.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, it sounds, it's such a sad or melancholic sounding song. It's so beautiful. It's a real highlight of the album, and it gets better by every listen. It sounded, I didn't hear much in it first time, but now it just gets me every time. I know my view of it hasn't got that same sentiment as Monty. What you just said there, I think, is really poignant. I love that way of looking at it. My way's a bit colder and more harsh. But yeah, it's it is. If you look at how often tans come up in Spark songs, maybe they can just think of lots of words to rhyme with tan. But I strongly believe that it's always to do with, you know, songwriting or their career.
Where's the tan?
Sorry, no, it's the opposite of the tan. So it's coming out from the cold, where they're doing the hard experimental songwriting and not getting the credit for it.
Yeah.
Whereas going out and feeling the sunshine is that's the chorus of Left Out in the Cold. You know, one day I'll be warm again, one day back on form
and,
again.
And now here we are.
Yeah, and then you have the same thing in Barbacutie, with For the Sake of Man, he has forsaken his whole tan. Living in the cold, he is advancing what we know. It's something that comes up throughout their career. And yeah, if you take this view of it, then it always seems to click into place, in my opinion anyway.
Can I follow up on something that Paul said? Because, you know, this is to me the song, a song that personifies why we're Sparks fans, because we may not know what they're getting at. They might be all meta. They might be just having something about them that's interesting, but we know there's so much more under the surface. And all of us have spent, for I've spent 50 years trying to figure it out. And Joe has too. I know that. And,
yeah,
but just to, let me make this point real quick, that if you're just listening to this as an album and all of a sudden this song comes on, you're going to say, this is stupid. The lyrics are dumb. But if you listen to it in the context of something, however you listen to this album, maybe what I said is all wrong, but somehow if you listen to it in the context of all this whole album about, it's not really sunny today, even if it looks sunny today, which is really what this album is all about, it takes on so much meaning. And that's why I just wish, you know, somebody said it was the worst album they ever made on the first day it was released. On Facebook, and that just struck me. I don't know. I give them credit, I guess, because I don't know how you can be that confident.
Same.
But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. This is what it's all Thanks, about. Monty. Yeah.
Shall we move on? The penultimate. No, not penultimate. We still have a couple more. 12, A Love Story. This is a fun one. I got to buy some drugs for my girl. It's the only one I don't have the lyrics in front
of. For this girlfriend of mine.
Yeah, there, exactly. I didn't take a whole lot of notes for this one. I enjoyed the production. It was a lot of fun. It was jarring. And I just made the note that the loop, if you listen very closely, the synth loop and that they use throughout the song cuts off about a beat or maybe half a beat before you think it would, before it loops again. And I'd have to point it out more if we actually listened to it. But once I heard it, I couldn't stop hearing it. And it was very jarring. As you know, a lot of this song was to me in general. Anyway, I haven't heard a lot of Spark songs like this, you know, thematically, I suppose. You know, I enjoyed listening to it, despite the fact that it was jarring and like the production. I'm going to let someone who has more thoughts about it fill in the blanks.
Not me. Yep. I agree. I think you captured it. So,
okay. Oh my gosh. Is this nobody?
I've got some ideas. It might be hard to explain, so maybe not. Leaving a queue to go to pick up drugs. Drugs are often. Yeah. You've got other songs like I've Never Been High, it sort of ties into this theme of, as we know, Sparks are very healthy living people. They don't, they famously don't
straight edge.
Yeah, you've got what's that song? Edith Piaf said it better than me. It's about living a clean life, not having these stories. So going to buy drugs for your girlfriend, but then coming back.
And it's not my thing, by the way.
Yeah, it's not my thing. It's not my... Yeah, exactly. But with, sorry to bring it back to Annette, but with Annette, it's going to a dark place in songwriting, which isn't their thing usually. They haven't written straight up dark songs their entire career. They've only hinted at it. They've had subtexts. So, yeah, basically, he goes off to get some drugs for his girlfriend. Not his thing, but he's coming back. So this has got leaving as well in that sense, but it's also got returning, hold my place.
And it's sort of unlike that in a way. I mean, it's sort of the dark side of Suburban Homeboy, you know, when they were singing all those funny lines, mm-hmm. bust a cap at some guy at the Gap, you know, like, mm-hmm. yeah, guys would do that. They don't. But, you know, they're... And so, you know, even when he goes into that sinister voice, I'm fine by this girlfriend of mine, it's like, ooh, where's that come from?
That's so weird.
It mm-hmm. is. It's like mm-hmm. the song is kind of unlike, the voice is unlike him. The,
oh, you know, yeah. You know, yeah, there's some manipulation of Russell's like, voice in this, which is not something you often hear at all.
So they're doing it in that way. It's a love story, but it's jarring, you know, because love can be jarring, I guess, you know, and it's unlike them, you know. So it's kind of like this, it's, I like it. I hear that doo, 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 in my head, you know, like I hear some of the instrumentals in my head as well as the voice, you know, and I can't really sing it too well, but yeah, so that, to me that, you know, like, you know, he's going, that he's buying this drugs for his girlfriend of mine, you know, but he would never do that. I mean, we never buy drugs, let alone for a girlfriend. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. So I don't know. It's just some weird, dark fantasy or dark continuation of Suburban Homeboy. If he kept going down that path.
I like that connection.
I think he's one of these complex sort of Sparks characters who's indulging in a bit of sort of streetwise bragging, but underneath he's insecure. He's insecure about his girlfriend because he keeps saying this girlfriend mine, you know, and telling the person in the queue, don't hit on her, you know, she's mine. And he's insecure about losing his place in the queue. I mean, why can't the girlfriend keep the place in the queue? And but contradicting the sort of streetwise bragging by saying, well, it's not my thing anyway. It's not her, not my thing, it's her thing. So don't dump on me.
Yeah, kind of false bravado, you know, kind of like, you know, like we were talking about Suburban Homeboy, you know, they wouldn't do that. And like this one, he's in a queue and save my place. You know, people that probably do drugs, they don't wait in a queue and they don't save each other's places. And, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like, okay, you know,
a little fast. And then, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then picking up on Penny's point, in addition to what you said, it's that false bravado where he says, you know, don't go after her or anything like that, because she's my girl. Yeah. You know,
she's not your kind, you know.
Yeah, she's not your kind. So
whatever kind that would be, but yeah, that did stand out.
Shall I move on? We got two more songs here. This is a biggie, I think. It doesn't have to be that way.
They always said that you cannot change your mind. Do it once and you're defined. Do it twice and you're divine. It doesn't have to be that way. Okay. They always said that you need to have a plan. Doesn't matter any plan they'll understand. It doesn't have to be that way. Okay. I'll pay for it. No choke-down song, I'll pay for it. No sing-along, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. They always said you must stay between the lines, be easily defined.
to fight, or you're wasting all your time. It doesn't have to be that way. Okay. They always said.
You know, I just read all kinds of Metasparks in this one. We talked about that, the theme of undefinedness, of things being ill-defined, and I think there's a lot of that in here. It's a lot of it sounds about songwriting, or just how you, you know, go, you know, how you present yourself in your career as a an artist. I'll pay for it. There's a lot of I'll pay for it comes in a whole lot. I'll pay for it with what? With my own failure. You know, if I'm wrong, I'm not sure. But this is another one of those like all that, to me, that just it's really heartfelt. And I think it's a little more if I'm right, it's a little more transparent, and that I do think it's kind of Sparks talking about Sparks and what they do.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that they say at the end they reject the idea of music reflecting your life and crime, and they say it doesn't have to be that way.
But that's perfect. That's exactly what Ron would do, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't think they ever do write about their lives. So I think they write about their art.
Yeah, well, their strife fits into that.
Yeah, I think their personal lives never come into it.
But no, Paul, I think on some of these songs, it is starting to come into it a little
bit. Yeah, it might do.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. I think it's more that with Annette, the goal was to make a tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. So for that, they worked with Leos Carax to kind of bend them into the right shape, to say, take the irony out of your songs, you know, do this and that, gave them these instructions. So everything leading up to it is, you know, how do we achieve our goal of making a real art house tragedy? Therefore, all these moments of reflection tend to be related to that, is how I see it. It's because their songwriting is going to a darker place, because that's what they had to force out of themselves to make a film like Annette. That might make no sense without watching the video that I made on this.
No, I understand how it's part of the narrative, but I think they are more reflective on this album. I think it's something you've seen on the last two albums as well, and that's why I think it's so unique. But I think this is not only a response to to the critics in Not That Well Defined, but I think it's also continuing the themes that they built in All That. And you hear the same acoustic guitar at the beginning, you know, and they never used to use acoustic guitar. I mean, maybe once or twice, but now this is clearly they're hearkening back to All That. And there's some things that they want to say at this age of their lives and at this point in their career. And I think their lesson for all these bands that are coming is you don't have to conform. It doesn't have to be that way. Sure, we paid for it. But we're so happy that we did it the way we did it. And sometimes I think you got to just take what's on the surface and say, you know, yeah, that's a pretty cool message. And that's what I hear, at least, when I hear this.
There's a debate over whether I'll pay the price is a positive thing or a negative thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I see it. I agree with you. I think it's purely a positive thing. I think they're happy to pay this price.
Mm.
On the video that I did on Terminal Jive, obviously the last song on Terminal Jive is The Greatest Show on Earth, which I was making the case is saying that they're happy to ditch electronic music, which was the biggest music in the world at the time, in order to make this quirky sort of Devo-style rock music that had a small niche audience compared to, you know, Depeche Mode and like Gary Newman and Soft Cell and these electronic bands would take that sound further. The chorus to that song is, and it's worth it even if you've got to pay a heavy price.
Right.
So that was a point that I made a month or two ago. And here they're saying, you know, they're happy, but here they're saying, I'll pay for it. I'm happy to pay this price. It's exactly the same points with a 40-year gap. It is how I see it.
And if you listen to how he says it at the beginning, it's a little bit frenetic. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The end, though, he's saying, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. And he's like proud that he has done that. And I think that itself is very interesting to me.
There's a note of defiance in there, like we talked about earlier. Yeah. And I think this is one of the few songs on the album that, that where I think the theme and the point is overall positive, which is not something that you see in a lot of these songs. I mean, they're like, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. And by the way, you shouldn't be afraid to do so too. That's what I
think it's one of the most overt statements of sort of Sparks' vision that we've seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was just a little thing. I don't know whether Paul, who's seen the live shows as well, noticed this, but when I heard the song on the album, the OK, I took that to be as like a reinforcing. You know, it doesn't have to be that way, OK? You know, that sort of OK.
OK.
But I noticed that once or twice when Russell was singing it, he said, it doesn't have to be that way, OK. As though it was somebody responding and saying, well, all right. You know?
And I then thought, it doesn't have to be that way, question mark. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I wasn't quite sure. I mean, maybe that was just a blip. I don't know.
But they're so undefined. So undefined.
I know.
Anybody else before we move on to Love of Tima?
I wonder what you think of like no chart bound song, I'll pay for it, and no sing along.
Right.
Is that they don't mind that they've produced something without a chart hit on it, or are they setting out to do that in the first place? Do they not want this success that other bands define themselves by?
No, I don't see how that would be the case, really. The former.
Because everything they do is poppy and accessible. They make pure pop music. Mm. And usually you wouldn't expect that music to be... you wouldn't expect it to be underground and away from the public eye, but here,
but pop music that isn't popular.
Yeah,
I think they used to say that about XTC.
All right,
but stretch it out, Paul. I stretch it out over a 55-year career, where they started out with different goals than they may have now.
Right.
And so, you know, there were times when they were trying. In my opinion, they were trying to find a successful formula. Indiscreet wasn't it. Look what they followed that with. Big Beat. Introducing Sparks. They were trying to find something, and they paid for it. It didn't work.
Can I give an alternative explanation?
Yeah, sure.
You've got to make a living, don't you?
Well,
got to make a living.
What they do so frequently is leave their audience behind. They do it, particularly in the pre-Beethoven days. They would reinvent themselves, and they would make very little effort to take their audience with them. So, you know, they became a British band, then they became an American band again, then they became some easy listening band, then they became a German disco band. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a normal career, and at no point did they... kind of capitalize on the history of who they were. They're constantly becoming this new band. So maybe it's the starting out that's interesting to them. Maybe it's the genesis of it, or at least in the first half of their career.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it can be that they don't care about being as big as U2. They don't care about... you know, selling many records at all. All they care about is the next, whatever comes next, basically.
I think at one point they really did care about selling records, though. And you know, but taking the other point of view, which is kind of what you're saying, if they really cared about selling records, after Propaganda, you'd get a third one produced by Muff Winwood, which would have the same style of music. That, to me, was the wake-up call, by the way, with Sparks. It was like, oh, this is nothing like Propaganda.
No,
you know, sure, similarities, but you know, Joe, I'd really like to hear your view on this, but I think that that's where they made a decision to really start to chart their own path, but I still think they wanted to sell records. And then you got the next few years with them kind of figuring it out.
There are some things, though, so I hope I'm not monopolizing things here, but there are so many things that don't make sense. Like, for instance, they do the 21 by 21 gigs, but they don't record them. They don't video them. If any other band did that, it would be a box set and it would be in the shop for Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a pure artistic endeavor. It's not commercial and it takes so much effort. Mm-hmm. They did that Noel album, and with a few edits, those songs could have been huge. They could have been absolutely massive. But again, they didn't promote it. Mm-hmm. Then Terminal Jive, same thing. There were some really strong singles on that album. The only place they promoted it was France. Mm-hmm. They do this sort of thing time and time again. And it's like, my belief is that they're not really interested in making a huge name for themselves. It's about growing the band into something new and something bigger. And who cares about the commercial side? The only exception to that is Gratuitous Sax, where they needed a hit single because the band were off the rails. But that's a whole other thing.
We are monopolizing, and so I will just make one last comment on this, which is I don't think they got to that point until Little Beethoven. But that's another discussion we can have.
Yeah.
Okay. Can't wait for that one. Thanks, guys. Finally.
Gee, that was fun being with you all this time. Being with you all this time. Gee, that was fun. Gee, that was grand, letting me be in your plans. Finally a change of plans, still it was grand.
Gee, that was fun. The last song on the album, and one we are all just dying to read as much as we can into, thinking, is this Spark saying adieu? Oh, I don't know. But it's a wonderful tune. And it's again more personal than most of the songs they write, except for maybe All That, which comes to mind. And I'll leave it at that. Who'd like to go first? Oh, I see grins. Does anyone have any? Penny.
Anything? Well, just at the after they sang a snatch of this at the concert, and when at the end of the concert, because we talked before about, was this their sort of their swan song? Is this their bye-bye? And at the very end of the Manchester concert, where Paul was sitting right behind me, Russell said, "We'll be back real soon," and I turned around and Paul and I went like,
"Told you."
Yeah,
I read it. I mean, yes, obviously you can read it as talking about Sparks, but it's also sort of a breakup song. All the things the guy wished he'd done to retain the relationship, or to keep the relationship, or to retain the memory of the relationship. It's a very poignant song, but still, it was fun. It could be obviously about Sparks, but they don't seem to be giving any other sign that they're not doing things. We've got another big movie musical coming up.
You're right.
He said,
which I recently found out soon,
you know, and we hope that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe a bit of a head fake.
Yeah, they're maybe playing with us, thinking, oh, they'll think it's their swan song, you know, I was just, you know, ending of the album. And at first I thought, gee, that was fun. And I'm thinking, were they thinking about the album that we just listened to, like messing up our minds about things, or, you know,
or the previous 56 years, or
yeah, or the 56 years, because, you know, they're always like Monty was saying with the song before that, they seem to be on a path and then they just change, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, now they had put something out that's totally different and doesn't sell as well. But I think it's, I don't know, maybe they just don't want to go down that road. Maybe they did at the beginning, but they have regret. I think I see some regret in this. Like, you know, if I hadn't been on my phone, if I was more in the zone, you know, kind of things. Oh, if I had done this, and you know, that I was more, I had more positive things to say to you or whatever, compliments, you know, but oh, well, that's the past. You know, so it's sort of a song of regret. It's a solemn song, even though it's fun in the title, again, you know, the opposite thing. Not fun.
It's the opposite of all that, isn't it? Exactly. Yeah. That's a relationship.
There you go.
This is a relationship that didn't.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that.
I'll offer two thoughts. One, it's a very somber closing to a very somber album. So in that sense, from a musical perspective, it's very, very appropriate. Yeah. Weird. But appropriate, least fun song ever. But the other thing is, if I go back to think of the life cycle factor, this is the end and makes perfect sense. So for me, there's that level as well.
Or even the line, it was worth the wait, even though you showed up late. Does that mean like all the people coming to their concerts now, they're finally, you know, they're getting this claim the last few years, you know, how long have they been there? Now you guys are... You know what I mean? Yeah. Now we're playing Royal Albert Hall, you know.
That's another way to look at it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I wrote that down for that reason, I guess. You know, like, okay, yeah, well, we're here. Some of us have been here. You may not have seen us, but we've been here.
I love it. Anyone else?
I think they're definitely toying with the idea of it being the end of Sparks, but it clearly isn't, because they've got this movie coming out soon. In that podcast interview that I was talking about earlier, when Russell was talking about this song, he actually said it's a song about, you know, it can be interpreted in many ways. He said it can be a song about a relationship coming to an end, or you could read it as being the end of Sparks. And then he quickly rolled that back, you know. And I'm pretty certain it's, well, we know it's not the end of Sparks. And going on those performances, they've still got so much energy. I see it as being, if Annette was this step into writing dark lyrics, dark stories, and this is turning that concept into 4-minute pop songs, then that's the end of that phase. And it's looking back at it. Mm-hmm. To support this theory, fun comes up a lot in Sparks lyrics. You've got a fun bunch of guys from outer space. Hippopotamus, you've got I wish you were fun, and isn't this a little bit like fun?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know if everybody else here believes that those songs are completely unrelated to each other, that, you know, isn't it a little bit like fun? Sounds like it's unknowable unless you put it into a context of, well, I hate to say it again, but Annette. Yeah.
But Paul, I think you made a really great point, because, you know, if there is this connection to Annette, and I think you've made a persuasive case that there's a context here, saying that this kind of puts an end to that period. I used to think this was, the first time I heard it, I thought this was about the end of Sparks. I quickly dismissed that idea upon repeated listenings. Now I think what you're saying makes sense, because if this new musical is upbeat or something, it is really a new phase for them. I don't know if it's upbeat. It could be even more downbeat than Annette. But
you know, can I put it this way? Sorry to
I just want to finish saying that I think you're making some great points, and it's very thoughtful.
Oh, thank you. What I was going to say is the next movie they've already said is going to be a comedy, and Annette is very clearly a tragedy in the purest form. If you look at The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman, the whole plot is a decision of whether to make a Hollywood comedy or whether to make an art house tragedy. And it plays with the themes of comedy and tragedy right the way through. It ends with a happy Hollywood ending. There's joking about it not being a Hollywood ending, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can look at that as being a decision on what film to make, then if Sparks are making a comedy, I guarantee you it'll be full of happy, fun, poppy, accessible music. That's what I think. And
yeah,
I think that's putting an end to the Annette.
Just space. Like that Jacques Tati movie that they
made
all those.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or great Confusion. Thoughts. We're gonna make some Confusion.
Yes.
Now. Yeah. Confusion.
I remember those newsletters. No, I love Jacques Tati. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But maybe it is a pivot away from, like you said, net type music. Now we're going to pivot again. You know, here we go again. Come with us if you're brave.
Move on. Yeah.
Hang on.
Well, I'd be excited if that's the case. You know, it's funny because I keep, as they continue and keep releasing new stuff and everything, you know, I just get this feeling like, and this creeps up a little bit more in their lyrics, you know, when they mention things like the passing of time and mortality and things like that. I'm like, God, these guys really would just rather not have the finite lifespan of a human being be an impediment to these guys. Because it just seems that, you know, if up to their own devices and, you know, not the laws of nature, they'd be going.
They make 50 more albums, like they said, you know.
Exactly.
Advancements, we can make another 50 albums, you know. And live long. Live long and prosper.
Indeed. Live long and prosper. Does anyone have any final notes before we wrap this up?
This was fun.
It was.
Great.
Thanks for bringing us together.
Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you guys for being here again. I think this was a really great recording. It's going to be up on the cloud. And just can't wait. I can't wait to sink my teeth deeper into this album. Can't wait to see the show that I'm going to see when we get back from Europe. And I'm really happy to talk to you guys and all the exciting things that that everybody is doing. This is a really great, exciting time. And I thank you all.
And I'm looking forward to them coming to the U.S. Monty and I are going to see the second and third shows, right, of the tour.
Yep.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they keep the same songs. I hope so, because I want to hear these new songs. You know, it's like a third of the set is these new songs. It's like 7 out of 22 songs or something like that. So,
right. Yeah. It's a hard thing to do. How do you make a set list, you know, when you've got 26 albums? Yeah.
But that's another thing that makes them so amazing. I mean, instead of playing two or three songs from the new album and then just putting out a bunch of hits, they put out they play 7 songs from the new album.
Yeah.
I was looking at the set list. Yeah, I'm like, whoa. And I love this album, so I'm going to be happy to hear those. As opposed to like, the new stuff. Could you play old stuff? No, it's all great. I love how
you'll find you'll be left with a feeling of joyousness, not of melancholy or misery.
Absolutely.
Somebody said about Escalator, you know, that was like a highlight. So then I listened to it and went, it is? And then I listened to some more. And okay. You know, because I was scratching my head going, oh, okay. I was expecting something else, but okay. So I can't wait to hear. Can't wait.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Can't wait.
All right. Hey, well, thanks, everybody.
Thank you,
again,
Christian.
You know, everybody's got great stuff coming up, and I'll make sure to promote those things as I can for this thing. But I'll keep you all abreast of when this is going to come out. But thanks, guys, and have a wonderful night.
I'll check out your blog. Podcast.
Yeah, I want to check out that blog for sure.
Yeah, I have to write it down or I forget. My head, I have so many things going on at any time, so I want to listen to that stuff. Check it out.
Bye, guys. The good is crying in her latte, sad. The good is crying in her latte, wow. The good is
crying in their latte. So many people are 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 crying in their latte. So many people. The girl is crying in her latte, yeah. The girl is crying in her latte, sad. The girl is crying in her latte, wow. The girl is crying in her latte, bad.